Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Kathleen Williams on Blog Talk Radio, my first show. How exciting. We're here tonight and we're going to be talking to men about men. This is going to be a phenomenal program. So as people start to call in, I'd just like you to settle in a little bit, listen to the music by Lavelle, and we'll get started talking in just a second. This is your host, Kathleen Williams, on Blog Talk Radio, and you're listening to Lavelle, Soul Piano by Lavelle. Great. We see some callers coming on. Thanks so much for dialing in, everybody. Just to take chill out a little bit, listen to this music by Lavelle, Soul Piano 2. This is Kathleen Williams, your host. And you can check me out online at KathleenWilliams.com and at www.imjustsayingtv.com. We'll be talking tonight about men and to men. So I hope you're ready to chat. Thanks, all of you, for calling in. This is great. I'm excited. It's my first time on Blog Talk Radio, so I want to thank all of you for hanging in there with me. If some of you want to listen in online, I believe you'll be able to do that by searching out the show on Blog Talk Radio, and you'll be able to join chat rooms and all of that stuff. And we're just waiting for our special guest tonight, Mr. Les Brown, to call in. He'll be on the air shortly. He just called me a few moments ago, and he's on his way from a meeting at West Angeles Church of God in Christ, which used to be my church when I was living in Los Angeles. As a matter of fact, Bishop Blake is the person that blessed my son and I when we were leaving Los Angeles and moving out to Ohio when I decided to go to law school right after my divorce. But enough about me. Let's hear who's on the line tonight. Somebody I see from 347 number. Are you there? Well, I can't hear you all, so maybe you can hear me. I'm going to start the chat session, so if you all are there, you can talk to me on the chat. But anyway, let me tell you a little bit about why I... Oh, great. Caller's on the air from 347. Hello? I think I have everybody muted. Let's see. Okay, why we're doing this. It's been quite a while now, maybe about 3 or 4 years, that it just has been moved on me to talk to men, and both men and women, about issues regarding men in particular. And a lot of people have asked me why I've decided to do that, and I think it's just been my mission and my call. Part of it has to do with the fact that I am a single mother. As a lot of you know, I've been blogging and talking about that quite a bit. And as a single mom, raising a son in particular, it was extremely important to be able to have male role models around and men who took an interest in not only my son's life but in my life. Men who were available to tell me about communicating with a young man, talk to me about the differences in raising a boy and from the way I was raised as a young woman. It was really absolutely essential that the men who served as coaches to my son, ministers to both he and I, and friends to both of us, would come in and share some information about the particulars of raising a boy. It saved us, really. It just saved us. And so as I talk to a lot of other women, many of the things that they say are consistent with sometimes a misunderstanding of how boys communicate, let's say. When they get angry about something, they may want to hit something, whereas girls get upset about things and they want to talk to their girlfriends and so forth. So there's a lot of differences, and it just pressed upon me that in order for me to be able to raise a son successfully, that I was going to have to do a whole lot of learning and understanding and communicating with men in particular. So that's how this started. And we started reaching out to, that's how it started and how we started reaching out to men. And as it continued, the wave just started going on and on and on. And men got involved, and they were excited about it. They wanted to communicate. They wanted to tell us how they were feeling. So as many of you know, I did a television program of last week that was on the air here in Manhattan and in Queens and in Brooklyn, where a lot of single fathers got together and just talked to us about their issues. And surprisingly enough, men have a whole lot to say. You know, it's not surprising. They have a lot to say, and they want to be heard. And so that's why we're here tonight. We want to hear from men of all ages, whether they are young men and have messages that they want to share with their moms, because my son had a whole lot of stuff he wanted me to know, or men who are adults now and have raised their children or are having challenges raising their children, and they want a lot of women to understand what they are going through. So the single moms, or just the moms that they happen to be married to, so that mothers can understand that men have challenges. You know, a lot of guys will tell me sometimes, you know what, it bothers me that people think I don't have emotion. Maybe I don't share it the same way that you do, but it doesn't mean that I don't have emotion. So honor the fact that I do, and honor the fact that I will respond to something differently than you do. So that's how this all got started. So I don't want to take up too much time. I actually want to hear from a lot of you. And thank you all again for tuning in to my first Blog Talk Radio show. And if you're wondering why I'm continuing to talk, it's because I can't yet hear you. So we are working over here to make sure that your voices can be heard by me. So if you will allow me just 1 second to check on the technology here, I want to open up the line so we can hear who's on the phone and get some comments from you as we are waiting for Mr. Les Brown to call in. Give us just 1 second. Anybody out there? Well, I know you're there because I can see the numbers that are on the line. But for some reason, that's less. Oh, Mr. Brown is calling me, so I think he's trying. But can you answer? Hello? Hi, I have Mr. Brown on the phone, and apparently he's on the line. And he's on the line, and we're just having a little challenges from getting him on to opening up these lines so we can hear everybody. So I'm going to put him on speaker, and prayerfully we'll be able to hear him this way. You can turn the music off. Yeah. Okay, so we're gonna put Mr. Brown on speaker, and hopefully you'll be able to hear. And while we're still working out how to open up the line, so everyone will be able to talk. Oh, great! Somebody is calling me now. Wonderful. Okay. Okay. Mr. Brown.
Hello. How are you?
I am doing great. We are working on opening up the lines on the radio show itself, so we'll be able to hear you talking to me on the, you know, on the radio as opposed to my having you on speaker. But thank you so much for calling in. Les, how are you?
I'm doing better than good and better than most and sometimes even better than that. What about you?
I am doing phenomenal tonight. And, you know, it's exciting and actually interesting because on television I am not nervous, but on the radio I am. So.
Wow.
Yeah, so bear with me. But it's a pleasure to have you on the air, Les. Thank you so much for calling in, and thank you for joining in on this really important topic, just talking to and hearing about issues of importance to men. So, you know, I want to let you go ahead and open it up, and then I have a bunch of questions that I want to ask you. Hopefully we won't run out of time. But we have about maybe about eight or so callers, and people are still calling in. To hear what you have to say, and we're, Sean is working on opening up the line so we'll be able to hear them on the air. But want to hear from you. It's the end of 2009. We've seen a lot of things going on in this country and around the world whereby people are saying that men are just not stepping up to the plate. And I know that not necessarily to be true. So I just want you to talk a little bit about, you know, your experience in manhood, growing up as the child of a single mother, want to address a little bit about family issues, and just encouraging everybody, both male and female, on the line as we close out 2009 and walk into a phenomenal 2010.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for this opportunity, and thank you for the work that you're doing and the vision that you have to create life that can help us to move forward. Now, relative to what you're saying about people have said that men are not stepping up to the plate, and you said you take exception to that, well, I take exception to what you have said because I know in my own personal case I have not stepped up to the plate. I know as I look at and I obsess 2009, I could have done so much more.
Wow.
So much more. I mean, that what I've done doesn't even scrape the surface of what I could do and what I should have done. Now, having said that, what I think it's very important for us as men to begin to assess ourselves. Too much is given, much is required. And I was thinking as I was preparing and getting my mind set for this interview with you that the most difficult thing I've ever done, I think, aside from believing ultimately that I can do what I'm doing now, was to evolve to a place in my thinking because of the influence of Mike Williams, who's been my mentor for many years, of what it takes to be a man and what it takes to be a father, and working constantly to adapt and to live up to that portrait and to that vision that I see in my mind because I've fallen far short. But also seeing that from a place as many times I've said in one of my speeches that I feel like the lady who said, Lord, I ain't what I want to be, ain't what I'm going to be, but thank God I sure ain't what I was. I'm truly a late bloomer at 65 in terms of being a good father. I'm a far different father now and far more responsible and mature in my response to fatherhood than I was when I was 25 or 35 or 45. And it's still a growing process. I mean, today I had a very important meeting, and it's a meeting that easily could generate well over $2 or $3 million. And my son was late picking me up, and I had to leave, and I had to leave him. And then I got to the meeting, and I got there just in time, 1 minute before 10 o'clock. And so I had to get my head straight to go into the meeting. And so he came in around 25 minutes later. And so he embraced, I was meeting with Bishop Charles Blake at West Angeles Church. So he embraced Bishop Blake and his son, Chuck, and then two other individuals in the room. And then I motioned for him to come and to hug me. Now, there would have been a time I would not have had the clarity of mind, and my anger would have been so fierce. First of all, I told him, look here, I've got this. Wait outside. We're involved in the discussion here. I'll see you after the meeting. And embarrassed him and humiliated him and let him know how angry I was.
Wow.
And I decided, and it's interesting how things can influence you. I saw the movie the other night with Michael Jackson. And when I was in the movie, one of the things that I enjoyed about this movie, apart from his genius, was he was talking to a keyboard player about he wasn't on rhythm and on the beat that he wanted. He wasn't giving him the sound that he wanted. And the guy said, I understand what you mean. He said, I know you understand what I mean, but you're not giving me what I asked for. If this guy kept going back and forth with him, he could have said, look, shut up. This is what I want. Play it. He didn't do that because lions don't have to roar. He said, listen, that's not it, and I'm doing this with love. And so I heard his voice. I heard that voice. I'm doing this with love. And I decided, rather than respond to my son from a place of anger, and I could have said, I'm justified in being angry. Mm-hmm. He was late and almost had me late, and I wasn't able to prepare for this to the degree that I could have. But rather than do that, I came from a place of love. And when I got in the car afterwards, I never said anything either about it. I left it alone. And I want to continue to move from a place of love. And so as I look at this whole thing of what it takes to be a man, what it takes to be a father, that it's not an event. It's a process. It's an ongoing, growing process. And we grow into it. And we must always look for ways to improve, be better tomorrow than we were the day before. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, Les. But you know what I want to ask you? How do we make that improvement? And even before we get there, how then does it happen that, you know, we're in such a state where we're not stepping up? What is it? Is it innate? Is it just that we're lacking the male role models? There's so much conversation about the fact that, you know, young men are growing up without fathers in the home. And we talked about this. There are over 10 million single-parent families headed by women. So is it that, or what do you think it is?
A part of it is conditioning. Programming, and the other part of it is it reflects our state of mind, our values. If you look at television, I was saying to John Leslie, I said, look, if you look at television and you go on ESPN, you look at CNN, you look at them when they're playing basketball games, the only time you see black men on television, three or four black men on television with shirts and ties, talking and speaking intelligently about anything, it's about sports. It's about sports. You will never see, the other night for Monday Night Football, or you look on Sunday, you never see where you have three commentators that are black and two white, unless they're talking about sports, football or basketball. Now they're very adept, very articulate, very knowledgeable, and able to go anywhere with that conversation, have passion, and have personality. But you never see those type of examples that our children are looking at television every day, talking about world issues, talking about finance, talking about issues that's maintaining our detriment. Is it because we don't have men that are articulate and that are not? Well, let me tell you the most abominable things I've ever seen on television. Larry King did an interview about Tiger Woods, and he interviewed Donald Trump and Dennis Rodman. Now, of all the people that Larry King, and I admire Larry King, and I think he's one of the great interviewers of all time in television, but of all the people for Larry King get to talk about Tiger Woods, he gets Dennis Rodman to talk about Tiger Woods. Not the Admiral. Okay, David Robinson out of Houston, Texas. Not so many young men that are articulate, that represent character and self-respect. Not somebody that's engaged in buffoonery. If you look at television, you can see Dr. T, or put the Mr. T on television with his little cartoon. Anything that can look ridiculous, anything that represents buffoonery and entertainment and clowning, that's what you see. And so what you see is what you get. Monkey see, monkey do. Well, unfortunately, that when kids see this, when they are saturating their minds with these types of images and videos and in games. When I was in a barbershop and the man, 67 years old, he was sagging, underwear showing, and he had a little washcloth hanging out of his back pocket. He had earrings on, and he had a toothpick in his mouth. 67. Come on, walking with a little doodad. Give me a break. So at a time, this is a time, just out of respect and honor of President Barack Obama, we should see the personal appearance of grown men, not young men yet, because the speed of the leader is the speed of the group. Just raise the standards of how we dress. I go around, I have my sons, go around in shirts and ties. Why? How you dress determines how you address, how people address you, how they treat you. And so the thing is that there are things that we dismiss and take lightly. The information that our children are exposed to, we say, oh, it's no big deal, this music they listen to, the profanity, the images they watch all the time. There's no big deal because they're prone to entertainment. It's no big deal. Those things don't affect our kids. There are far more things that affect them than those types of things. Well, I believe that garbage in, garbage stays. If you listen to garbage day in and day out, when I was in the barbershop and whatever I'm in there, they're either talking about entertainment, they're talking about sports, and that's it. They're not talking about dreams. The little boys sitting there in the barbershop, listening to all the profanity, watching the stupidity that's on the television set. And so as we begin to look at ourselves, all of this can be changed. It is programming, but programming that's reinforced by the choices that we make. And we have to make a conscious, deliberate effort to create something new, to create something different. And it's not about pointing fingers and blaming. It's about raising the bar, finding some like-minded people, and say, you know what? Here's what we're going to do until we drop, until we're boxed and buried. Here's how we're going to leave a legacy. Here's our imprint. Here's the standards that we're going to adhere to so that we will be the message that we bring. Really, that's what it's about.
Well, you know, that's phenomenal. And I want to address your exception to my exception because, you know, many people say this to me, Kathleen, you know what? You're in Never Never Land. You know, what we see are these negative images on television. What we see, and that's what impacts our kids. And this is for, you know, for the African-American community. Otherwise, we're talking about, you know, when you're looking at communities that are not African-American, you see a lot more positive images, just like you're saying about the commentators. If you see three or four African-Americans, it is usually about sports. African-American men together doing commentating, it's usually about sports. And I agree with you on that. And a lot of times you won't even see three or four. You know, they'll be balanced by others. But when I am out in the community, when I'm out, you know, when we go on trips, Les, or when we come to your programs and so forth, we see a different man. You know, we see successful African-American men. We know that there is an African-American man that's the head of American Express. We know there's a Ken Bouchard. We know that there is a black mayor of Massachusetts. We know a governor of Massachusetts. He may be the first one, yes. We know we have an African-American president. There are so many positive images if we're just going to look at the black community. Where are they? You know, why aren't we...
Well, first of all, here's the thing that I believe. There's no question there are thousands, literally millions of men who don't seek the limelight, who's not rushing all across the country trying to get in front of a television camera to say, here's what I've done and here's what I'm doing. There are a whole lot of men who are working behind the scenes, men who are stepping up to the plate to be fathers to young men like myself. Mr. Leroy Washington never made television in Columbus or in Miami, Florida. And here's a man that when I was at Booker T. Washington High School in Overtown in Miami, who looked at me, a kid who'd failed twice in school. I was in special education, and my junior year at school, I finally went to summer school every year that I was in school. I had to go to summer school in order to make it to the next grade, not to fail a third time. And here's a man who asked me to do something. I told him I couldn't do it. I was not one of his students. I was waiting on MacArthur Stevens, and he said, why won't you do what I'm asking you to do? And I told him that I was in special education. I was educable, mentally retarded. The students erupted in laughter, and he said, don't ever say that again. Someone's opinion of you does not have to become your reality.
Absolutely.
There were no Channel 4 and Channel 6 and Channel 8 standing outside of Mr. Washington's house when he sat with me in his car and talked to me.
Wow.
Like I was his son.
Wow.
Nobody was there when he gave me a tie and taught me how to tie a tie. And I wore his shirts, and they were baggy and looked like I was a kid going to a Halloween party, because he's the first man in our community that I saw with a shirt and tie that looked like me, and who taught me how to be articulate, who said to me how you dress and how you express yourself. Once you open your mouth, you tell the world who you are. There were no television cameras. The Miami Times nor the Miami Herald wrote about black men like Mr. Washington, and he was just one. So what we have to understand is, no, there's most certainly a lot of men out there doing a lot of good work. I believe that we are in the condition that we're in is because the bad people are outworking the good people.
Wow.
They work real hard. I was here before 50 Cent and P. Diddy and Puff Daddy and Jay-Z and all of these guys. I was here before them. And when I see these young men with the saggy pants, when I see young men who today see going to jail as giving them credibility, or they see it as a rite of passage, or they see it as the African-American version of a bat mitzvah, when I see that, when I look at the astronomical young men who end up going to jail, who are being framed by cops, many who are there because of criminal behavior, but many who are there because immature and also because of corrupt police, policing of our community that put labels on these guys, give them a criminal record, and that writes off over 80 different professions they can't participate in. They can't live in public housing. They can't get a job as a janitor in a daycare center or in a school, and they are locked into a lifestyle of poverty and crime in an early grave. It angers me, because I know that there's so much more that I could have done had I not been so singly focused on creating wealth, and had I not been so selfish and only taking care of Les Brown and my children, and not looking at how can I begin to expand my role in the community as a taxpayer and as a responsible citizen, and be the kind of man to many of the young people that Mr. Washington was to me and several other young people. There, even though I've had some impact on some kids, but I could have done far more had I been more serious and saw that as a mission with my life, as I do now. Fortunately, even though I'm 65, I'm a young 65. I do 142 push-ups every day. I couldn't do that when I was 30. So I still got my health. I still have fire. While my friends are talking about retiring, I'm refired. And so I just thank God that I can unscramble those eggs, and I know that I have less tomorrows than I have yesterdays, but the name of the game is, as George Washington Carver said, do what you can where you are with what you have and never be satisfied. And as I look at men today, and we look into the future, and if we're in it to win it in 2010 and know that it is our time to win in 2010, people from all walks of life, because this is a time that everybody should have big dreams.
Yes.
And every time a person look and think that they can't do it and have some negative thoughts coming in their mind, I tell them to snap themselves out of it by just announcing with conviction this mantra, Barack, because we know that this is a time that it's possible that I can be a better father, that the men that are listening, they can be better father. This is a time that we can reduce the sperm donors that exist in our society. This is a time that we can teach young men how to become responsible and that life has value. This is the time that we can reduce the recidivism rate and the prison incarceration rate. This is the time that we can increase the high school graduation rate and the college rates. This is a time that we can create more businesses. This is a time that we have to begin to understand that we have the power within us to do more than we can ever begin to imagine, because what's possible for one
is possible for all.
President Barack Obama is not an exception. He's an example of what can happen if you develop your mind, develop your communication skills, and be selective of the relationships that you surround yourself with.
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness. You gave me so much to talk about. All right. So listen, this is what you just said is just so amazing. It's just off the charts. I want to go back to what you said about being selfish. First of all, you know, God knows you are far from selfish. And I just want you to talk a little bit about that, because you just hit on the solution. This is the answer. You said to me, you said to all of us listening, you said to all of us listening that had you worked harder, that you would have impacted more, or that you could have done so much more. And you mentioned Jay-Z and a lot of the others. And those gentlemen are definitely being looked up to by a lot, not only our youth, but our adults. So I just want to throw that back out there and ask you to talk a little bit more about what do we do going forward. You know, you talk about
we got to create collaborative relationships. I look at them, and even though they are diametrically opposite of what I want our kids to do, I used to be them.
Yep.
This best friend that you're now talking to was not always here. He was inside of me. But the person that I was for so many years was LB Triple P, Les Brown, your platter, playing Papa. There were none before me, and there will be none after me. Therefore, that makes me the one and only. Young and Sanguine, Love to Bangle, certified, bonafide, and dubly qualified to bring you satisfaction, a whole lot of action. Look out, baby, I'm your love man. I was an entertainer.
Yes.
That's how I saw myself. I was a man about town. I got 9 children. So when I look at my life and I look at them, if I point at them, I'm pointing a finger at myself. I was mentally dead for many years of my life. I was a destructive force. I created a lot of damage.
Wow.
I can't unscramble those eggs. My goal is to do a lot of good before I leave the planet to reverse some of the damage I did. And this life that I was living, being irresponsible and operating out of a low state of consciousness.
Mm.
That's why when I look at them and look at young men, when I go to Rikers Island or go to Chino Prison, I know that everybody, if I can be saved, everybody is reachable, teachable, and redeemable. But I was so convicted and so stuck and lived that life for so many years. And fortunately, because of a Mike Williams out of Coshocton, Ohio, a dropout from Ohio State University, who saw this Les Brown that you now hear this voice on this phone. He saw this in me when I was a man about town. I did not know this person existed.
Wow.
But I'm clear when I remember reading a report of an interview that the late George Bernard Shaw had in a report asking, if you had it in your power to come back and be anyone throughout history, who would you like to be? Here's a man that was known among the elite and world leaders, one of the most brilliant men of our time. And he said, I'd like to become the man I never was.
Mm.
And so that all of us, if you ask the people that are listening right now, the men, the women, I don't care what sex, what gender, what race, if you ask them, if you had your life to live over again, could you have done more than what you've done thus far? I think if everybody's honest, they will join me and say yes.
Yes.
Yes, okay?
Absolutely.
And so what we can do is that we have to, part of what I'm doing, Kathleen, that's why I'm training speakers.
Yes.
Teaching them how to become strategic communicators. That's what Mike Williams, and I encourage people to go to MikeWilliamsSolutions.com and order his book, The Road to Your Best Stuff, MikeWilliamsSolutions.com. What he did, he introduced me to my best stuff. Let's find you more than a disc jockey. That MC shows at the Bottoms Up Club and Club Jamaica, the Pink Pussycat. You can do more than that. And he helped me to see myself as a radio commentator and becoming a community activist. And ultimately, I ran for the Ohio legislature. I was elected to 3 terms. I passed 14 bills my first term in office. He transformed my vision of myself and expanded my vision, so he was able to strategically communicate with me in a way that caused me to look at myself differently. So one of the things that I'm doing with my life and my payback and paying forward is training and teaching other individuals, everyday people, how to become strategic communicators, how to influence and impact and transform people's lives through the power of speaking strategically and creating within that person a desire, a want to, where they want to do better, where they cannot settle for being who they have been up to that point, and they're willing to die to who they are to give birth to who they can become. because they were in the presence of your words, as you spoke, their lives will never be the same again. That's how Mr. Washington transformed me. That's how Mike Williams transformed me, through the power of strategic communication that gave me a glimpse of what the possibilities of who I could become.
Wow. Wow. You know, this is just phenomenal, because now you're saying that and thank God I am one of those speakers, and you're absolutely right. It's not only transforming my life, it is transforming my son's life and everyone who comes into communication with me. So what you're saying also is that as you going back again, you talked about the high school graduation rate. Les, in New York City, I don't know how many people know this, but in New York City, the high school graduation rate, specifically for black boys, black young men, is 32%. 32% graduate.
In 3 years, 62% of them will be behind bars.
Oh, my gosh.
62%. Now, here's what is important for us to recognize, Kathleen. How people live their lives, and we say this constantly when we're doing our training, how people live their lives is a result of the story they believe about themselves.
Mm.
Take rap music, for instance. Rap music is a story. It says, my life is screwed up, I'm screwed up, and I'm mad about it. Whenever Russell Simmons or Puff Daddy or those guys defend the explicit language and the vulgarity, what they always say, well, they're just talking about what they've lived and what they've gone through in the hood. So they're just talking about real life. You know, they're just keeping it real. That's what they're talking about. So what we know is how people live their lives is a result of the story they believe about themselves. What we're doing as strategic communicators on the other side, and by the way, that music delivers that story of that mind virus of what I call HIV, hood-infected virus, AIDS, addiction to incarceration and death syndrome.
Mm.
What we're doing is we're coming from the opposite place to interrupt that story, to distract people from looking back. Because Elsie Robinson said things may happen around you and things may happen to you, but the only things that really count are the things that happen in you. So our goal is to distract, dispute, and inspire, to distract people from constantly talking about what they've gone through, to strategically prove to them and show them methods and techniques of how they can recreate themselves so that they can be empowered to start writing a new chapter with their lives.
Absolutely.
See, whatever you focus on the longest becomes the strongest. So it's all you talk about is going through hell and being poor and killing each other and selling drugs, you will continue to reproduce that. And so what's important now is to have a languaging team of individuals who will cast a vision that will help people to get a vision of themselves beyond their mental conditioning and their circumstances and allow themselves to see themselves living a different kind of life.
Yeah.
That's what's most important. And let me share something with you about what the level of thinking, what we have now, what that has produced. We have, and let's focus on particularly the African-American community, we have more PhDs and MBAs and college graduates in the United States than we have any place else in the world. Any place else in the world. If you put together the economic wealth of African-Americans in this country, our wealth would amount to the 10th most powerful economic force on the planet. We have more wealth than all of Africa and all of the Caribbean islands combined, all of Africa and all the Caribbean islands combined. Now listen to this. We have over 80,000 churches that have over $55 billion in brick and mortar and generate over $46 million every Sunday morning. And if you ask, what is the net worth? My favorite book says, judge a tree by the fruit it bears.
Mm.
What is the net worth of the average American family? The net worth of the average white American family is $88,651. $88,651. That's worth writing down. what is the average net worth of the average Latino family? $7,932.
Are you're dropping down $81,000 from one?
There we go. $7,932. Now we could say they just got here, and many of them don't know the language. So the average net worth of the average white family, $88,651. Average Latino family, $7,932.
I'm scared.
And
go
looking
ahead.
At the average net worth of the average African American family, $5,988. Okay? Latinos have already passed us. $5,988. Now, Dr. Carter G. Woodson said in a book called The Miseducation of the Negro, if you can determine what a man shall think, you never have to concern yourself with what he will do. He said, if you can make a man feel inferior, you never have to compel him to seek an inferior status, for he will seek it himself. And if you can make a man feel justly an outcast, you never have to order him to go to the back door. He'll go without being told. And if there's no door, his very nature will demand one. So when you look at our community, you look at a community, and the state of that community reflects the state of the mind of the people that inhabit that community. And so if you look at, if you checked out the budget of the NAACP or Operation Push or the Urban League or every city government, every county government, every state government, every federal agency, and ask them, show me your budget. What are you spending on mindset development and transformation and maintenance? There's no governmental agency. There is no church that spends one dime. As a man thinketh, so is he. Be ye not conformed to this world. Be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. The reason we've been over here standing in this place talking about, if our thinking doesn't change, nothing else is going to change. If you can determine what a man shall think, you never have to concern yourself with what he will do. If you can make a man feel inferior, you never have to compel him to seek an inferior status, for he will seek it himself. And if you can make a man feel justly an outcast, you never have to order him to go to the back door. He'll go without being told. And if there's no door, his very nature will demand one. So when you look at our kids, when you look at the adults, when you look at our community, when you look at the statistics, the dropout rate, the incarceration rate, the crime rate, the poverty rate, all of those things are a reflection of the condition and the state of the minds of those people. And that's an area, that's the missing element that no one is dealing with. We don't have a clue about who we are. The three primary reasons that people live lives of poverty in the midst of plenty is, one, they don't know what they have going for them. Two, they don't know how to make money with what they have going for them. And three, they don't know how to get access to the people that will pay them for what they know. So when you look at our community, when you look at, this is the land of opportunity. People come here who can't speak the language, and they run circles around us. The statistics indicate that the average immigrant has a four-time greater chance of becoming a millionaire than the average American. And it is all has to do with state of mind, Carlene. That's Kathleen. That's why I do this work. That's the area. And people, they don't want to deal with this area, have not dealt with it. And all of the programs, if you look at them, they don't even understand how it functions. It's, we do self-esteem, or we do mentoring, or we teach them job interviews. They don't have a clue. How does the mind function? How do you change it? What was the work that Dr. Seelman did with Learn Optimism, the 26-year most exhaustive study on how to change how people think and reverse the psychic disrepair? What was the work that was done when the book was written by Psycho-Cybernetics, of Dr. Maxwell Maltz, who was the plastic surgeon that changed people's faces, but inside their mind they still felt ugly? And what he discovered, and the insights and the tools of how to begin, help people to build a new image, a new vision of themselves. Or Joseph Murphy and the Power of the Subconscious Mind, or Change or Die by Alan Dushman, another scientific study that 9 times out of 10 a person rather die than change. They don't have a clue. If they don't study it. And so that's why they don't even understand the value of becoming knowledgeable of how the mind functions and what it takes to change a person's thinking so that you can now change the outcome of their lives. That's where we are. And that deals with fatherhood. That deals with being a man or being a woman or being a mother. That deals with developing an achievement-driven culture rather than an entertainment-driven culture. That deals with how our kids begin to value each other. Do you realize that last year alone, 3,000 kids, young people, killed each other and 4,000 killed themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
yes.
What is that? That is the condition, state of mind. And so this is the missing element that we have to work on constantly so we can begin to create a brand new future for our people.
So what do you say about doing work with fathers? Now that I started talking.
You have to work with fathers, and you have to work with mothers, and you have to work with children. It's a holistic approach.
Mm-hmm.
All of us have to work together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mike Williams is still my mentor. I'm a better father because not only of his advice, but also because of his example.
Mm.
So we all have to work. We all, we all are a work in progress.
Absolutely.
See, be patient with me. God ain't through with me yet. Let me tell you something. I'm 65, and I wanted to body slam my son. Boy, 25 years old. I'm set up places I can fold out front, and I fortunately had a friend who can come by and pick me up while he was at Kinko's making copies, and I'm here. I got visions of body slamming this boy, and I got 5 stents in my heart. I had 3 angioplasties, as you know, okay?
Yes.
And I'm ready to snap, okay?
Going into specifics or anything, but just your willingness to let people know the truth about where you've come from so that everybody knows, listen, it's not over till it's over. You know what I mean? And even then, it's not over. So you still have time to change. You still have time to make an impact on the world. You still have time to be redeemed in the eyes of your children and in the eyes of your family. And the reason that I ask you specifically about men, because God knows I'm a mom, so I know I have transforming yet to do, not only as a woman but as a mother. Every day I'm still growing. But the reason that I ask you about that specifically for men, for the men who are on the line and for the women who are on the line, because there's so many complaints about men, we have, we have the hope and the inspiration for gentlemen. They want to know, listen, I'm a father. I may not be perfect, but I'm here. I'm doing what I want to do. I want to know what is out there for me to do better for my kids. Talk to me a little bit. Tell me the importance of a father in a young man's life. And you grew up as a child of a single mom. So you talked about your mentor and the fact that he's still in your life.
When Father's Day came around, I gave my mother a Father's Day card. Mm-hmm. I was in Chicago. I did a radio show in Chicago for a couple of years, and one of the events I had that was extremely controversial, at Mother's Day I honored mothers, and at Father's Day, I also honored fathers who serve as mothers. And Father's Day, I said, Happy Father's Day to all the fathers who provide and protect, and Happy Father's Day to all the mothers who serve as fathers and leave the sperm donors at home. We had an event to recognize outstanding fathers, but I also let's recognize not only fathers who provide and protect, but mothers who've been serving as fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that was extremely controversial. You know, I didn't care. But we have created a culture where it's okay to be a sperm donor.
Mm.
And that has to change.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be changed. And it takes time to change that kind of culture and change that kind of mindset to help people to understand and develop a love and appreciation for themselves. When you don't have a love and respect for yourself, anything goes. I was talking to some young men at Wyandotte homeless shelter, and I said, "Tell me something about yourself, young man." His name was Anthony, and he said, "I just finished doing a dime." I said, "Excuse me?" Now, I knew what he meant. He was saying, "I just finished spending 10 years in prison." I said, "Explain to me, what do you mean you just finished doing a dime?" Oh, he said, I just finished, you know, doing 10 years in prison." So you're saying that your life was only worth a penny a year.
Mm.
That's
oh
your
my
vision
God.
Of yourself. You did a dime. A penny a year. God selected you out of 400 million sperm, and you have the unmitigated goal to stand and look me in the face and say out loud, out of your mouth before witnesses, you did a dime. You were living as an animal with three hot meals and a cart. And your life only amounts to a penny a year, not even a penny a day, a penny a year. That's how worthless your life is to you, even though God chose you out of 400 million sperm. Here you are talking about you did a dime. And I say to you, that remember I said, why people live as they do, number one, they don't know what they have going for them. When we go to church, they sell us on Jesus, on Buddha, on Allah. Nobody sells you on yourself when you go to church. It's all about selling people religion. When you go to school, they sell you on information. If information or religion can change people only, everybody would be skinny, rich, and happy. The first question God asked Adam, where art thou? Where are you? Who are you? And the key, when people know who they are, when you have a strong sense of identity, that gives your life a sense of direction. And when your life has a sense of direction, that gives your life a sense of meaning. It's been said, never ask what is the meaning of life, ask what is the meaning of your life. And I believe starting in daycare school, in kindergarten, we need to start making a part of the curriculum teaching our kids that their lives have meaning, that there's a reason for them being here. We have to teach them early on how to build relationships, early on that life has value. By the time a child reaches age six, they've seen over 2,000 violent acts on television to program them to believe that life has no value. The little boy was asked on a witness stand after he was charged with killing his parents, why did you pour salt in their wounds? And he said, I've seen it on television. He was 10 years old. And so we have to begin to early on say to our kids in their cartoons and their coloring books and the things they read, it's not a good thing to go to jail. That, you know, when you look at daycare, you go to a daycare center, you know, the little kids, little boys' hair is already being braided. They already have sagging diapers, sagging pants, and got tattoos and little earrings. So we got to, there's a cultural change and transformation collectively that has to start from the top down. When a fish dies, it stinks at the head first. So you have so many grown boys that don't have a clue of who they are and define themselves by the number of women that they can get pregnant. Their brains is in the head of their penis, and they merely see women as receptacles for their orgasms. That's the programming. And so we have to begin to change that kind of mindset and begin to make some inroads to that kind of thinking that's destroying the future and the fabric of our family, and help them to understand that life is God's gift to us, and how we live our lives is our gift to God. And out of that kind of culture, we can produce a plethora of Barack Obamas. It's there. These bones can live. All we have to do is say, rise, bones, rise.
You are amazing, and I thank you so very much for this conversation. It has planted so many seeds for thought, so much work.
Today, I feel today. I want to hear this myself.
Absolutely. I mean, and there's so much work to be done. You know, I believe that Blog Talk Radio will have it available for you to listen to it afterwards online. I'll send you the link to that if it's so. But there's a lot of work to be done. So I just want to ask all the listeners, I know we have not figured out how to get you to speak so that we can hear you. But to ask all
of... You mean the audience could hear me?
Yeah, no, they can hear you, but we can't hear them. So Sean is going to unmute them right now so I can ask all of them to speak up and ask you a few questions. We only have a couple of minutes remaining. But you've given us a lot of food for thought, a lot of things for us to do now, looking at curriculum, looking at providing for our children that whole conversation about themselves, learning how important their lives are. Because if it is not happening in school, it can happen at home. It can start there. And learning how to communicate less. So if you have any other tips that you'd like to give, we have actually 3 minutes remaining, tips that you can give to families.
We've got to create a community of achievers, an achievement-driven community, and teach people the value of evaluating their relationships. Dr. Dennis Kimbrough said out of Atlanta, if you're the smartest one in your group, you need to get a new group. Upgrade your relationships. Look at your relationships and ask the question, what is this relationship doing to me? Am I growing mentally, emotionally, spiritually? What is it doing to me? Because who you have around you determines who you will become. Show me your friends, show me the book that you read, and I can tell you your future.
Awesome. We have unmuted a line. Let's see, I think Wayne is on the line. Wayne, can you speak up? Yeah, we're still not hearing them, but I can see them online, Les.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
The other thing I wanted to ask you, you're about to head off to Africa. So tell us a little bit about what that trip is going to be about.
Well, I'm going to Abuja and Lagos, Nigeria, and I'm going to be speaking there at several colleges and universities and various leaders and community groups. And taking also two speakers. Alvin Darling is going. Dr. Julie Van Butten is going as well. What we're going to do is share with them some of the cutting-edge, state-of-the-art methods and techniques that they can implement in transforming the mindset of their youth, and also what it takes to make it in today's new world. This is a global economy. We've gone from a domestic economy where you can work for 40 years, 40 hours a week, and retire from doing the same day in and day out. This is the era of the three C's: accelerated change, overwhelming complexity, and tremendous competition. So we're going to teach them how to become the competitive world-class citizens and how to begin to make a global impact with their lives.
Awesome.
And their mission.
Awesome. Well, I just want to thank you again so much, Mr. Les Brown, on the air with us tonight, and our call is about to end. Mr. Brown, we're going to try and get you back on January 12th. I'm going to call your folks to see if we can. Thank you all so much for calling in, and by the time we do the next call, we'll be able to hear you on the line. So,
this has been Mrs. Mamie Brown's baby boy and Kathleen's pride and joy.
Amen. Thank you, everybody. Happy New Year to you. God bless you. We'll hear you again next Tuesday night at 6 p.m. We will look forward to hearing from you next week as well, where our guest will be Mr. Malik Carey, an awesome man of God and a former athlete with an amazing story. So tune in next week, Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Real Men Talking on Blog Talk Radio. Mr. Brown, thanks again. Happy New Year to you.
And Happy New Year to you as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you again, everyone. We're about to close out. Talk to you next week.
All right,
Happy New Year.
That's great.